Congratulations to the Sullivans. Now, if you guys don't know Thomas, he's so happy. He's happy. That guy spent 25 years in prison. You see how happy he is? I should have an eighth of what he's got. Anytime that I feel down, sorry for myself, I think about him. I've never seen a guy with such joy and God in his heart. He's unbelievable. He's a powerful example. You're a good guy, Thomas. I was asked to make this announcement. The 37th Big Book Seminar at NBC Suites in Fort Lauderdale, Mother's Day, May 7th to May 10th, Thursday, 7 p.m. All right? And with that, who's speaking tonight? Paul Lee. Paul Lee's speaking tonight.
And then welcome to the point. From Russell.
Thank you. Thank you very
much. Take it one way.
No, I don't do life savings. Yeah. That's great. I want these TV cameras on. Care about your thumb drive. I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic. My name's Paul Lee. And it's great to see everybody here. Thomas, wherever you are, where are you? Oh, yeah. I love watching. You exude this thing, man. I love that, no kidding. And, you know, if you're new or you're coming back, welcome home. You're off the hook, and that's what was told to me a real long time ago. You know, there's some of you been around a while, and some of you are brand new, and some of you have been bouncing in and out like Eric spoke about. And congratulations to the people celebrating, by the way. The only thing I can tell you can keep bouncing in and out, and that's okay till you get it. But the sad thing is I've watched a lot of people bounce in and out and bounce out, and then we eulogize them. So if you can tell me what's gonna happen the next time you pick up, then go. You know, go have a little party, and not everybody gets back. We just buried so many people, it's really tragic. Anyway, because of celebrants, now I've got to speak very fast. Or, not that to say I'm pissed off you celebrating, but the reality is I'll just do the third step next week too. You think I can't? Believe me, it doesn't bother me. And like James said, there's no alcohol allowed, no drinks allowed in here. But last week I told you they announced there's this new thing, powdered alcohol. So I'm sure by the end of this series, somebody will be coming in with powdered alcohol and selling it at the corner there. For those of you with a hearing problem, I'm from New York City, and I'm just so blessed to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm so blessed to have been rescued from the gutter that I was in. And whatever your gutter is, it's your gutter. You don't have to look for another gutter, okay? Once you get here, you've gone as far down as you need to go. Now, some will go further, but you don't need to. Anyway, we have 12 steps in this program. They're suggested, well, probably strong suggestion. But I remember one guy when I was brand new, he said, the 12 steps have 200 words in them. And if you could, you know, coordinate your life in conjunction with those 200 words, you'll be in good shape. Now, because I didn't believe anyone when I got here, and I would hope that nobody here believes me, I went home and counted the 12 steps. The one thing I could tell you, while I was counting the steps, I wasn't drinking or using. And the other thing I could tell you is I counted them and there were 200, and I was able to go and tell Jim Monahan the next week, you were right, there's 200. He says, oh, thanks for telling me. So, I like to laugh and I like to have fun. That's why I really identify with Charles. And that's what it means to me by you're off the hook. When I got sober, I didn't listen to anything about the steps or God or you better get a spot. You better. Well, you know what made me laugh when I got here was the first time that my sponsor, who became my sponsor, Ray Allen, was standing at the podium of the 101 Club, and he had 5 jokes, God rest his soul. I mean, his whole life, he had 5 jokes. And so we would all follow him around, you know, and we'd be sitting there, me and Maurice, God rest his soul, all of us, and we'd be sitting at the table or wherever it was, and we would try, you know, like name that to him. When he would start telling one, you would try to figure out which one it was, and whoever was the quickest to name it. So the one I'm thinking of right now is Ray's famous attitude joke. Okay, it's a 6'6" wrestler, and he marries a 5-foot-tall little girl. They go away on their honeymoon. And they go to the honeymoon suite, and he decides right away from day one, he wants to establish the tone of this relationship. So he goes to her, she's sitting down on the bed, he takes off these long overalls, he's 6'6", and he throws them across the bed at her, and he says, here, why don't you put those on? She says, what do you mean? They're 3 times my size. I'd be swimming in them. He says, that's right. I want you to know from day one who wears the pants in this family. So she sits down on the bed and thinks for a minute and reaches under her tiny little miniskirt, pulls down her tiny little panties, and throws them across the bed at him and says, here, why don't you get into those? And he looks at her and says, what do you mean? I can't get into those. And she says, that's right. And you never will until you change your attitude. That's the way I was introduced to alcohol tonight. Nothing about these steps of God or anything else. So if you're sick and tired of the misery out there and you want to come in and laugh with us to a life, that's all I still do to this minute. I think people aren't getting sober anymore because it got, this is my own opinion, because it got too serious and there's not enough humor. Okay, the people I've sponsored, and a lot of them are sober a long time, we laugh because everything is laughable. Deaths, divorces, bankruptcies, IRS leads, foreclosures. And that's happened to me just in the last few years. I mean, you know, you don't come in here and skip up the 12 golden steps of life and never experience a negative emotion. You come in here, and if you're blessed and graced to stay here long enough, well, then you experience this thing called life. And life happens. And what this deal teaches me and teaches us how to do is how to deal with life and how to handle the stuff that we're not real excited about happening. Ray would always tell me the serenity prayer. The most powerful words in the whole program are the first 5 words of the serenity prayer. God, you're establishing contact with the power. Grant me the serenity. Grant me the peace and the calmness within. Doesn't say to grant me no problems. It says grant me the peace and the calmness within regardless of what's going on out there. And you know, it's just, that's where I try to be. And I've been blessed to be there for a long time. You know, we're supposed to be talking about the third step tonight, but because of the removal of 20 minutes, which I can't say that I'm very happy about, and I'm sure that Russell had something to do with this, but matter of fact, Russell sent me this picture. I can't show it to you. If I had one of those things, I could. Right before I got here, he sent me this picture of him in New York. And he's about in Brooklyn. And he's on his way to speak at a meeting in Brooklyn. And he sent me this picture that obviously someone else took. Okay? So I sent him back. He said, and knock him out tonight. Okay? So I sent him back a text and I said, Russell, that's great. You do the same. But do you bring a photographer with you everywhere you go? Which is very probable. And quite frankly, the reason that my taper isn't here tonight is she's in New York with Russell. That's what happens. They follow him around like little critters. He and I laugh. I love him so much. I really do. We have a great time here. All right, look. The first half of the first step is the only thing you have to do perfectly. Don't pick up. We admit we're powerless. We were powerless the day we got here. We're going to be powerless the day we die. I can't take the first one no matter what. That's the first half of the first step. That's a truth. The second half of the first step, that our lives have become unmanageable, that's a fact. When we get here, you bet our lives are very, very, very unmanageable, unbearable, jails, prisons, the whole nine yards. But if we stay here a little while, they become manageable. And how do they become manageable? We go right to the second step. It's like, this isn't like done hodgepodge. we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Okay, that's my manager. I mean, sometimes when my life gets unmanageable, I just dismiss the manager. I say, I don't need you for this one here, pal. And trust me, I pay the price for that. But the reality is, the longer I'm here, the less prices I like to pay, the less things I can do that deviate from the will of God. As a matter of fact, you were talking, Eric, about being in prison or the cell, wherever you were, drug and alcohol, playground, whatever it was, and picking up the big book, okay? So now I'm going to assume that was a Bible. I don't know which Bible. Was that the big book?
It was the big title of the big book.
Oh, then you ruined it. Anyway, well, make believe it was the big book. Because I was listening and I made a mental note. You heard of that big book, right? And everybody here heard of the Ten Commandments, right? Well, let me tell you something. The reason the Ten Commandments never work for people like us, every one of them starts with thou shalt not. And you tell me what I shalt not, and I'm shouting up and down Federal Highway. I'm the shouting king of South Florida. And all of these 12 steps tell us what we shall. We shall come to believe, we shall make a decision, we shall take an inventory, we shall share it with someone, we shall want to get our defects removed, we shall make amends to the people we screwed over. And then we want to stay on top of this, so we're going to take the inventory, we're going to get closer to God, and we're going to pass it away. That's the short version of the 12 steps. The reality is these 12 steps are magical. They are magical, they're miraculous. I don't care if you believe, if you don't believe, just believe that I believe. Because it's not even belief anymore. I know so deep in my soul, no matter what's going on, that there's a power greater than myself that I choose to call God that has carried me from the 70s when I committed suicide, from the 60s when I had knives to my throat and guns to myself, when I was overdosed, when I had abscesses, they were going to amputate my arm, straight through to recovery and everything that's happened since. The only reason I give more credence and more acknowledgement to what has happened to me since I'm sober and clean is because I remember it. I'm here. I've been a part of this. I've been watching. Matter of fact, this happened today. You know, I don't like to, like, go with old stuff. I mean, I do go with old stuff. I have a whole page of old stuff, which we'll talk about next week. But this is the new stuff that happened today. I open up my email, okay? And I get this email. Well, it was actually dated last night, but I opened it today. Paul, I'm sitting here at my desk in my house, and I came across a letter sent to me by his name, Steve H., when I was in basic training. He mentions you in the letter. I won't go into details, but it took me back some almost 50 years. Here, but for the grace of God, go us, all the best. And he signs his name with a phone number. Well, I was sitting home this afternoon, you know, making some notes for tonight. I said, what the hell? Let me give this guy a call. I semi-remember him from high school. I really wasn't, like, on the list of, you know, the A students in high school, which is why they asked me to leave. So, matter of fact, most people in high school, you know, you're on the Arista squad or the dean's list or the math team. I was actually in the yearbook on two different acknowledged squads. One of them was the bus squad, and the other one was the lunchroom squad. Now, let me share with you how proud this made my parents, may they rest in peace. The bus squad and the lunchroom squad were most of the same people. We were the large criminalistic elements in Bayside High School. I am certain the majority of them must be dead. And our job description was to make sure nobody smoked on the bus. If you did, we were allowed to kick the shit out of you. Make sure you weren't talking in the lunchroom. I mean, that was the way I began this whole psychosis. So I call up Harvey, this guy, today, and he says, oh yeah, wow. I said, so let me hear about this. He's in New York, and he tells me this brief story. He said, yeah, you know, I think it was 1969, he says, I got this letter from Steve when I was in basic training, and it says, did you hear Paul Efron got busted for a very bad bust? Now, this is some guy sending letters to basic training about someone that wasn't allowed in the Army because of my addiction. And so we're talking here, and it was just like a very cool thing that here I am, ready to come up here, and this guy from 50 years ago, and we're gonna get together next month when I'm in New York. Because really, you know, that's just the way it works. I mean, so, you know, something I had when I got here was the gift of desperation. And I hope that you have it. And if you don't have it, you better find it. Because to me, that's the main ingredient requirement. Remember, I was reading something this week or last week, I'm sure Peter knows where it is, one of the old literature things. And it said early on in AA, when you came into AA, before they would even allow you to call yourself a member, you had to go upstairs and you had to convince them that you were convinced. And I sit around with some of you young knuckleheads and I'm trying to convince you. Here you had to convince, I could only see this, sitting in Dr. Bob's study and saying, all right, so tell me, why do you want to stop? Well, my wife or my job, you know what, get out of here until you want to stop. They didn't like pussyfoot around. So that, I love that thing. So here's the deal. The gift of desperation, I had it when I got here. I have it more since I've been here. They have this old thing, which this guy Harvey reminds me of, that coincidence is God's way of remaining anonymous. See, there are certain things that have happened in my life that I can't even, on the wildest amount of imagination, no matter what the odds, I can't say that it's humanly possible. And you know what? It's not. Because what we talk about here is a power that's not definable, that's incomprehensible, that can do anything, anywhere, anytime. I don't know if last week, because I forgot whether I told you the story about Italy. Probably not. I probably was talking in my sleep about Italy. Here's what happened in Italy. In 2000, the year 2000, my wife had a small advertising agency, and we went to Italy with a whole bunch of people on a trip paid for by CBS Radio for the top advertisers. And there were 30 couples on the trip, and everything is free, all the best hotels in Lake Como and Naples and Rome and Florence. I mean, it was the greatest, like one of the greatest trips on the planet. But also, there was totally free booze, unlimited free booze. So we're eating and everybody's getting whacked, you know, just normal people get whacked. And obviously I'm not. And finally, at one of the last dinners, this guy that I got pretty close to, Kenny, he's at the next table to us, and he starts, you know, abusing me for not drinking. You know, what do you mean? You're not going to have a drink? Come on, Paulie, you know, really, you know, like that stupid kind of talk. So I'm listening to it, and my wife's getting upset sitting here because he's really, you know, making a little scene. So I say, honey, stay here for a minute. I get up and I go to Kenny's table. I say, come here for a minute. And I take him outside, you know, in the back. Not outside like that, he's bigger than me, he kicked my ass. I just take him out into the other room to talk to him. And I tell him one story that jumped into my head at that time of the hundreds of stories that have happened to me. And I simply tell him this story about how I started a riot in 1966 in the Singer Bowl in Queens, New York, at a Doors and Janis Joplin concert. And we were sitting there, and I didn't think they played long enough, so I went up to the microphone at the end of the concert, and I said, "What are you people, crazy? Throw your chairs!" I woke up in the 109th precinct the next morning because the cops didn't feel the riot I started was appropriate. So I told Kenny that story on a balcony outside of Florence in Italy. And it was the last time he offered me a drink. But I tell you that story for a bigger reason, a real God reason. I get back to Florida and it was when the market crashed and I went bankrupt again, okay, in 2000. I lost everything. Again, after having made zillions, I was bankrupt. I come home and my mailbox is filled with FedEx sellout notices. I'm done, again. And I have 20 years sober at the time. And an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous. How could that happen? Well, it happened because you're a moron. That's how it happened. So now the next day, Kenny calls me from New York. He had a sports management and memorabilia company in New Jersey. And he calls me up and he says, "You know what, Paul, I was thinking, and I would like you to come and help me build this company to a bigger level than we are right now." I said, "Kenny, I'm not moving to New Jersey. I'm just," he says, "Well, do me a favor. I have four seats to the Knick game tomorrow night. As I'm fly up, let's talk. Make a long story short, I fly up, we talk, and we work out an arrangement that I'm gonna help set up events for him." A year later, I'm just showing you the power of this hand of God. 1 year later, I'm up there, now Kenny knows my whole story, and he comes to me, I go in the office one day, and he says, "Paul, do me a favor, take a ride with me." And we take a ride to his top and longest salesman's house named Perry, who's whacked on coke and booze. And he's really like not showing up sometimes. And Kenny says, "Can you just come over here and maybe help him?" Kenny dropped me off at his house. We had his girlfriend leave the house. And I sat there for 3 or 4 hours, me and Perry one-on-one. The next day, Perry went into treatment in Connecticut. Perry celebrated in February 14 years clean and sober. Now, I tell you this not because, wow, I was there, so he's sober. I tell you this to show you the power of the power. I'm in Italy on a vacation with 30 couples. The one person of the 30 couples that I was directed to interact with somehow is the boss of this guy from North Carolina who's killing himself. A year later, I end up with this guy. We talk for a day. His life has totally, totally changed. Not as a result of me, not as a result of Kenny, as a result of the divine power and the long arm of God stretching from New Jersey and Florida to Florence and Venice, Italy. And a year later, Perry's life is totally turned around. He's an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous in Fairlawn and Oakland, New Jersey. I've spoken for him up there at his group anniversary. He's not like a make-believe sit on the sidelines guy. This is a guy that jumped into the deal and is reaping the rewards of the deal. So you want to say that's coincidence, that's fine. What I'm going to tell you is my God draws straight lines with crooked sticks. And what we have here is a room full of crooked sticks. And if you get sober, let God straighten you out, put out a message that's attractive to someone else, and then watch the miracle happen. And that's what happened. That's why I come to meetings. I love the deal. I mean, I really, you know, I know a lot of you came here in those real high-powered white vans. No. And that's all right. I think that's wonderful. But if you're in those white vans, you shouldn't have problems with a power greater than yourself. Because obviously, when they say to you, 7 o'clock, get on the van, please, that's a power greater than yourself. And now you're here, you're stuck in a church listening to a mental patient in one of the resort capitals of the world. So when you go home tonight, go to the mirror and take a look and say, what just happened? Obviously, your life's not really on top of the game. So what I suggest, if you want to get a little bit more on top of the game, don't pick up, get a sponsor, get your ass to some meetings, and your life will get incredible. Mad, glad, or sad, I go to meetings about four times. I love the deal. I bought the whole package. Anywhere I travel a lot now, the first thing I do is I look up meetings of AA or NA. It doesn't matter to me. Anywhere they're talking about the 12 steps, as a matter of fact, there's 100 12-step programs, every one of which I qualify for, except one. No, I swear to God, I read this. I don't know if anyone here qualified. I hope I don't upset you. The name of the program is Lip Balm Anonymous. I'm not kidding you. There's meetings. Now, can you imagine if lip balm was my issue? My story would be entirely different. Well, I would walk into CVS with these big overcoats, and I'd have inside pockets, and I'd take the blues and the reds. But there are people that obviously lip balm is making their life unmanageable, and they're going through 12 freaking steps for it. I'm not judging. I'm just saying. Right, you see, you know what, let me... The third step, yeah, we're definitely, it's going to be another week and a half because the third step.
Whatever you want.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I'm leaving soon. The third step says we made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood it. Doesn't say anything, but you made a decision. Okay. A decision is nothing without further action. The action that I believe is inherent in that decision are the next nine steps. Basically, you know what? You're sick and tired of being sick and tired. You see possible hope. You see a way out. Hopefully get a sponsor, because if you don't have a sponsor, to me, that's the second most important thing to getting to Alcoholics Anonymous, is getting that right sponsor. And a sponsor is very much like some of you old guys will remember back in the day, another word, phrase I hate, but back in the day, they had this thing called A triple A, everybody knows that, they still have it. But they had this thing called a triptych. Anybody remember that? Not you, Mike, they didn't have them in prison. They had triptychs. No, I'm serious, they didn't have like Detroit to go from this penitentiary to the other. They had triptychs, like if you were in Florida and it would tell you you wanted to go to New York and you would call up triple A, you'd tell them where you wanted to go and they would send you this whole folder. And here's what it would be. You'd look right at it. You'd look at it, it would fold over, and it would say, all right, start here, take the turnpike, and here's a rest area. And here's where you can get some fuel. And here's where you can get some lodging. And here is where the road is under construction. And here is where it's dangerous at night. Well, you know what? My sponsor is my triptych in sobriety. Why is that? Because he's taking the journey. He's done this thing already. He's going to tell me when I meet her just what to expect. Oh, Fred. This is what Fred was my sponsor. Fred, you're not going to believe this. I met her and she's so incredible. Paul, keep my number very handy. That's what he said to me. He says, because you will be using it more than you think. I'm going to tell you this cute God story because I thought about it today. And it's just another example of the power of the power. I get amazed, by the way. That's why I continually have my eyes open. And that's why I thought this thing with Harvey was pretty incredible. This guy's sending me letters from 50 years ago that has my name in it, and he's contacted me on Facebook again. I mean, come on. So about 5 or 6 years ago, I sponsor a couple of guys in New York. And one of them is an Irish Catholic, really Irish Catholic alcoholic, like most of you guys. However, I'm a Jewish junkie alcoholic from the same neighborhood, right? So they go on these retreats, you know, which are mostly Christian-based. They're not AA retreats. It's called Matt Talbot Retreat, okay? Whatever it is, I was never going on one. Until I'm up in New York one day, and Ron tells me, you know, Paul, the retreat is tomorrow, and so-and-so canceled at the last minute. Why don't you come with us? So I call my wife, I say, honey, I say, yeah, go ahead, go. We drive out to Eastern Long Island at this monastery, the Villa of some monastery, Sisters of Mercy, I don't know, something that, like, I don't know about. But, no, I mean, seriously, when people ask me, what church are you speaking in? I don't know the name of the church. I don't know the kind of church. There's two kinds of building, the one with Jewish stars and the other ones. That's all I know. I don't know Baptist, Protestant, Lutheran, monastery. I don't know that stuff. So anyway, that was the kind of monastery this is. And we go there, and we get our room, and I'm in this room, and a little bed. And I'm, anyway, so it was a very cool thing, and it's run by a brother. Not like a brother like you, Charles, like a brother. I mean, the brother could have been like you, but this brother wasn't. This was Brother Francis, okay? And he had one of these robes on, but he's also a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he says, so he set a theme for the whole weekend. You have a meeting in the morning and then a meeting at night and then little groups. So it was really a great weekend. And the theme for the whole weekend, for every one of his talks, was where you is where you is. Basically telling you to live in the present, that this is all it is, this is what you got. And he told a bunch of parables around that statement. Where you is where you is. So the weekend goes on, and I'm the new guy, and at these weekends, the way that they do it, is on the Sunday, as you're ending, they have the new people come up to get a coin. You know, just like, you know, in AA, I guess. And you come up, and everybody claps, and they give you a coin that has a number on it. Now, my number was 1463, okay? So they clap, I may have said something, or may have said a couple of words, or not, I don't remember. And I go back to my seat, and as I'm walking back, everybody say to my friend Ronnie, who I was with, they said, Ronnie, make sure to tell him what to do with the number, what we do with the numbers here in New York. Ronnie said, don't worry, he doesn't need to be told what to do with the numbers. So here's what you do. You take that number and you bet it for a dollar straight for the week, 1463. And then you bet it for a dollar box for the week, 1463. $14, okay? So I get home on Sunday, Monday I'm in the house, and Tuesday morning I'm going to the airport and I buy the ticket, and I get back Monday. I bought the ticket Monday in New York, and I get back, and I'm flying to Florida Monday night. Tuesday morning, I'm on my way to the 101 Club. I live in Coconut Creek. I'm driving. And sometimes they used to have it, now they have panhandlers, they used to have people selling newspapers on Atlantic and Powerline or around over there. So I said, you know, give me a paper, right? I buy the paper, and as I stop at the next light, I open it up. I open it up to the lottery, and the number is 1463. 1 second after looking at that, I realize I bought this ticket in New York. I'm in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. So I go from here to here in a matter of a minute. And now, so I call up Ronnie and I tell him what just happened. Now, Ronnie was sober a long time without missing a beat. He says to me, well, Paul, where you is where you is. Bottom line, that's what we do here. You know, a lot of stuff, a lot of laughter, and a grateful alcoholic won't drink, and that's what was told to me. And you know what? I took the grateful thing to another level. I really did. Ray and Fred would tell me about the importance of writing a gratitude list, and I started it. Well, 35 years later, I have many people, or some people in this room, have seen these. I have 27 journals in my handwriting chronicling my journey. So I can open, I do it with new guys when they come over the house. I open it to any page. I don't know what year it is. I don't know what day, although they're all dated inside the book. And it's a chronicling of showing no matter what happened. When I was almost ready to get indicted for some telemarketing stuff. When my wife left me for someone I sponsored. I mean, you know, well, there's nothing wrong with that. No, because I think that's why she came to me in the first place. But you know, the key is, I usually don't say that in Florida. I'll probably pay the big freaking price for that. I say that sometimes in New York. I don't say that in Florida. No matter what happens, you're going to have jobs, you're going to make money, you're going to lose jobs, you're going to lose money. So what? A grateful alcoholic will not drink. And if you can keep that hand out to the next bozo in the gutter, no matter what's going on with you, it's going to pale by comparison. You know, the last thing I'm going to say, because I know I spoke about it last week a little bit. I told you a little story about the guy who took me to my first meeting, and then, you know, he wouldn't take me home because I was abusive. And then he went out after 4 or 5 years, and he picked up, and he just recently, maybe 6, 7 months ago, got out of doing 15 years in prison, state prison, for robbing banks. I would visit him in prison, et cetera, et cetera. Well, 2 weeks ago, when I was here, I called him up because I wanted him to come in. Because he's come, I've seen him since he's been out, and he was coming to meetings, he was at the 101, you know, a few months ago when I spoke, you know, having a little tough time because he's inside for 15 years, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, to fast forward, so I called him because I wanted him to be here, and a girl answered his phone. And I said, where's Curtis? I don't know where Curtis is, this is my phone. I said, what? This is Curtis's phone. I don't know who Curtis is, this is my phone. So I called a friend of mine up in Northern Florida who would go visit Curtis because I introduced them. And he says, yeah, I don't know, I can't get a hold of him. Tonight, when I walked in here, one of the guys in the back of the room who knows me and knows Curtis said to me, Curtis is in very bad shape. He's out running. And I'm going to tell you something right now. Running 15 years later, after being in prison for 15 years, having been sober for 5 years prior to that, please keep Curtis in your prayers. Because that longevity and that future looks very bleak to me standing here. Anyway, I love you all. Next week, we do the third step.
You got it like that.